So on Daf Samach Amud Aleph, if you count down, let's see how many lines from the top, because I really want to start the new Mishnah today, but I'm not ready for it yet. I just have one last piece, Rava. It's about four lines down from the top. Rava Amar. Now, just to review and give a bit of a springboard for what's going on here. On the bottom of Daf Nun Tes Amud Beis, the Gemara quoted a Mishnah in Masechta Kilayim. I'm sorry, a Mishnah in Masechta Kelim, I meant to say. Now, what happens in the Mishnah in Kelim? You know, the Mishnah in Kelim is interested in classifying various utensils, and if the conditions are met, and it is a full, let's call it a full-fledged utensil, full-fledged kli, then it's makabel tumah, it's susceptible to kabbalah's tumah. And the Mishnah talks about a tabas, a ring. Now, what's the status of a ring? Is it makabel tumah or is it not makabel tumah? So we have here a contradiction between the Mishnah in Kelim, which I'm about to summarize, and the Mishnah here in the sixth parak of Shabbos with regard to the status of a tabas, of a ring. And the Mishnah in Kelim says that a ring is susceptible to tumah, and it doesn't matter what kind of ring it is. There are two major categories of rings. One is called Yesh Aleh Chosem, and the other is called Ein Aleh Chosem. Now, Yesh Aleh Chosem is a ring that has a seal on it, and it was used back in the day for like signing documents and various legal papers. It's kind of like what you would call today, I guess, notarized, if you know what I mean. And then there's another kind of a ring, which is Ein Aleh Chosem. And if the ring doesn't have a seal or a signet on it, then it functions as a tachshit. So it's ornamental in nature. And the Mishnah combines both categories of rings, and the Chiddush is that even a ring which has a chosem on it, it has a signet, even that's called a tachshit. It's a kli, which is called a tachshit, and therefore it's makabel tumah. And the truth is that might be true logically for a man, because a man, all in that sociology, a man used to wear a signet ring, but it doesn't seem to be appropriate in the case of a woman. Most women would not wear signet rings because those rings were more functional than ornamental, if you follow what I mean. They weren't a tachshit. Now, our Mishnah here in the sixth parak of Shabbos seems to make that distinction between the two categories of rings. So, for example, a woman would be allowed to wear a ring. Now, this is a little tricky, on a doraisa level, and that's according to Torah law, if it had no signet on it. That's because, according to Torah law, that which you wear either to protect your body for clothing or a tachshit or an ornament is not considered carrying in Rishus HaRavim. It's something that you're allowed to wear out in the public domain.
Right.
But in the case of a woman, the Mishnah Although on a Drabbanan level, the Mishnah will say, well, we don't want you to go out with a ring, even if it's an ornament. That's only Drabbanan, because the Drabbanan will choshesh that maybe she'll take off the ring, show it to one of her friends, and then she'll carry it for Amos and Rosh Hasharabim. But on the other hand, if it's a ring that has a signet on it, that's not an ornament. And that's a doraisa. For a woman to wear that would seem to be a doraisa. So the Gemara tries to reconcile the Mishnah in Kilayim with the Mishnah here in Shabbos. Because the Mishnah in Kilayim is addressing the case of women wearing rings, or women's rings, and it lumps together and it equalizes both a ring she'esh alechosem and a ring she'ein alechosem. Whereas our Mishnah seems to differentiate in a very fundamental way between those two categories of rings. So before we get to Rava, we'll just mention that the Gemara tried to reconcile this based on a statement of Rabbi Zeira. And Rabbi Zeira had a machlokes between Rav Nechemia, one of the Tanoim, Rabbi Nechemia, and the Rabbanon, and that's a machlokes in a braisa that seems to be about this fundamental point. So let's see if we could start with Rava, and we'll see if we're able to get ourselves on our feet. So again, so before we start Ravo, just to review, according to Rav Zeira, that's the previous answer to reconcile this apparent contradiction, is Rav Zeira thinks it all depends upon the Rabbanan versus Rav Nechemia. The Rabbanan will hold that everything depends upon whether the ring is made of a metal, like a gold or other metals, and as opposed to a ring that's made of wood. So a ring that's made of metal would be makabel tuma, even if it's a signet ring, whereas a ring that's made of wood, which again has to do with the laws of kabbalas tuma, there's a concept called pshutei kli'eitz, that a wooden utensil is not makabel tuma unless it's a receptacle, and a ring is not a receptacle. And therefore, according to the Chachamim, a signet ring would be makabel tuma if it was made of a metal, because when it comes to klei mateches, it doesn't matter whether it has a kli kibul or even if it's a keli pshutim. But according to Rav Nechemia, it doesn't matter one iota what the ring is made of, but rather it depends upon whether it has a signet or not a signet. Okay, Rava Amar Litzdadim Ktani. In other words, Rava wants to reinterpret the Mishnah in Kilayim in the following way. Litzdadim. Litzdadim means it depends whether this ring belongs to a man or to a woman. And he says the following. There are two separate cases that are being addressed in this Mishnah. And the Mishnah is saying the following, according to Rav. And this could be reconciled with our Mishnah in Shabbos. Yesh alech chosem, if the ring has a signet, it's a signet ring, then tachshit de'ish, then it's considered a very important ring for a man to wear, presumably because men would use the ring, and it was very functional, and it's a full-fledged kli. As we said before, men would use this signet ring to sign various documents. It's kind of like signing a check.
Right.
But ein alech chosem, If you have a ring which doesn't have a chosem, for a man, that ring is meaningless. Again, back in those days, you know, today men wear rings, but in those days, apparently men didn't wear rings, unless it was a ring that had a seal on it. Is therefore, it's only a tachshit de'isha, which means that if a woman wears a ring without a signet on it, that's considered ornamental. And that would be makabel tumah, but only because it has no signet on it. So even the Mishnah in Kalim agrees that there's a fundamental distinction between these two categories of rings. You know, one ring which has a signet and one doesn't. Even though, again, the language of the Mishnah before Rava came along would seem to say, Bein she'esh aleh chosam, Bein she'ein aleh chosam, it's makabel tumah, it is considered a kli. Says Rava, no. Bein she'esh aleh chosam means in the case of a man, and she'ein aleh chosam in the case of a woman. And therefore the Mishnah in Kalim, according to Rava's reinterpretation, agrees that a signet ring is not considered a kli, it's not a tachshit for a woman. So therefore, the Mishnah in Kalim reflects exactly what we see here in the Mishnah in Shabbos, that if a woman goes out with a ring that has no signet on it, then it's, at worst case scenario, it's only a violation of a Darabanan, which Rabbanan are afraid, as we said before, she'll take it off and she'll carry it for Amos. But on a Daraisa level, it's considered an ornament, it's considered a takshit, and there's no carrying, there's no otsah. But if the ring does have a signet on it, then as far as a woman is concerned, that ring is not the kind of a ring a woman would wear, and therefore a signet ring would be for a woman a violation of Doraisa when she carries it in Rishus HaRabim, even though she's wearing it. Because if she's wearing something that's not a kli, then it's called a basa, it's called a burden, and she violates Meleches Otsa Doraisa. Now, the Tosis Arush, which is quoted here in the footnote, says that Rava did not accept Rabbi Zeira, because Rabbi Zeira, which again, that was the sugya back on the previous Omid, Rabbi Zeira applied the machlokas of Rabbi Nechemiah and the Rabbanon to Shabbos. And it came out that according to Rabbi Zeira, Rabbi Nechemiah held that the laws of Shabbos would allow a woman to wear perhaps a signet ring on a Doraisa level. Anyway, Rava holds against Rabbi Zeira that Rabbi Nechemiah would agree that as far as Shabbos is concerned, a signet ring for a woman is a masa. It's a violation of the Torah law of Otsa. Now we get to Roman numeral number 3. We had Rabbi Zeira, that was the sugya Amud Aleph, on the Nun Tes Amud Beis. Now we have Rava's Roman numeral number 2 here on the top of Nun Amud of Numen of Samach Amud Aleph. Sorry, and now we get to Roman numeral number 3. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Omar, Tuma Ashabis Karamis. The entire contradiction, as it was posited, was based on an equation between Tumah and Shabbos, meaning the following, that in both cases, Tumah and Shabbos, the law is contingent on one single question, and that is, do you have a kli or do you not have a kli? Meaning, if it's a kli, it's makabel tumah. If it's a kli, then you would be violating Shabbos Doraisa. So the breakthrough now of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is that, on the contrary, there are two different criterion. And the equation between Shabbos and Tumah is incorrect. And that's because Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak has a special pasuk in the parsha of Tumah. So for this, we would have to open up a Chumash, which I might just be able to do. There's a parsha called Milchemes Midjan in Bamidbar Perek Lamed Aleph. And what happened is that the Jewish people defeated the Midjanim in battle, and they took the booty, and amongst the booty were various utensils, various kelim. And amongst them, there were golden vessels. And what happens is that these vessels, because of the milchama, because of the war, they came in contact with corpses, and it was tame. And these kelim were tmeim. So that we take a look at that pasuk, and it says the following: Tuma kli maisa omar achmona. The Torah adds an extra word here in the parsha of Tuma in Klei Midjan, and it uses the word maisa. Now, what does kli maisa omar achmona mean? You have a kli that was fashioned as a kli, and the Torah is telling us that it's mekabel tumah. What's the chiddush? What's the emphasis here on the fact that it was fashioned? And the answer is that in the case of a signet ring, that's called a kli maisa. Why is it called a kli maisa? Because it was fashioned as a kli. And that's true for a man or a woman. Meaning, even though for a woman, this kli has no function, if it has a signet to it, it's not a tachshit. But since the Torah went out of its way to teach us that a kli maisa is considered susceptible to kabbalah's tumah, and that's because for a man it would be functional, then if it was created as a vessel, that's called a kli maisa, it was created as a kli, then it's makabel tumah. So it means the following, that when you get to tumah v'tahara, according to Rav Nachman, then the criterion is that it was created as a vessel, and therefore the Mishnah in Kelayim includes both a ring that has a seal as well as a ring without a seal, both on the Kabbal Tumah. And that means that whether or not, you know, it's used by a woman or a man, if it was created as a vessel, then it's considered, there's a special ribui, an inclusion here, that it's considered makabel tumah. So ring is tame whether it has a seal or not, because although a ring with a signet on it is not a tachshit for a woman, it's still tame because it comes under this category of kli maisa.
Okay,
now we get to Shabbos. Shabbos, on the other hand, Mishum Masoi Omar Achmona. The criterion that determines whether or not you violate Hotzah is whether or not it is something that attaches to the body. It functions either as a cloth, apparel, clothing that protects the body, warms the body, or it's a tachshit and it beautifies the body. If it doesn't fit into any of those categories, you can call it a kli from now until doomsday. It wouldn't make any difference. It's a masa. And therefore, the Mishnah differentiates between two types of rings for women. Ein oleha chosem, tachshit, yesh oleha chosem, masoi. The Mishnah will tell you that, again, there's one part of the Mishnah that's explicit. The other part is by implication, through a deal. What's explicit in the Mishnah is that if yeso lechosam, I'm sorry, if eino lechosam, then it's considered a tachshit. Again, the Mishnah goes ahead and says that she's not allowed to wear this ring based on a Gzera Derabbanan, a Shavus Derabbanan, but on a Doraisa level, she doesn't violate Shabbos. That's why the Mishnah goes out of its way to say, Ein Aleha Chiyuv Chatos, to teach us that this is considered a Tachshit. But if the ring has a Chosem to it, and therefore it's no longer a Tachshit, then as far as a woman is concerned, if she wears this ring that has a Chosem, she has violated a Meleches Hotzah Doraisa because she's wearing a masa. She's carrying a masa, and she's not wearing a masa. Now we go back to the Mishnah. So this is all a discussion about rings. And now we go on to discuss two categories of needles. There's a needle that has an eye, and a needle that doesn't have an eye. So the Mishnah says, Lo b'machat she'ena nekuva, which means that if the needle has no eye, we would call it in our language a pin, and it's ornamental, it's a tachshit. She can't carry it in Rishus HaRabim, even though it's attached to her garment, because she might take it off and show it to her friend. But that's only a violation of a Durabana. On a Doraisa level, she's wearing a tachshit. And that could be one way of learning the Mishnah. So let's say you have a needle that has an eye. A needle that has an eye to it is only functional for sewing. That's completely out on Shabbos. So you could say that if the needle has an eye, then unless she's a unless she would violate Melechah Shabbos, of which we don't suspect any of the women of doing, then it really has no function on Shabbos. If it has no function, then it would be considered carrying, because it's not a tachshit. So now the Gemara asks a question. The Mishnah says that a woman who wears a needle without an eye is only violating a drabbanon. And this would be if we considered a needle without an eye to be an ornament, or perhaps some sort of a beged. Okay? So the Gemara asks, well, if the needle without an eye, again, is a beautiful needle, like we have pins that are very beautiful, so you can call it a tachshit. But the Mishnah doesn't mention a word about the beauty of this needle. It seems to be that this needle looks pretty much like another needle that's used for sewing. The only difference is it doesn't have an eye to it. So if it's not fancy, if it's not ornamental, and it's not made of any, you know, it's not studded with expensive diamonds, you know, or other jewels, then in what sense, on a Doraisa level, would it be a malbush, you know, that when she wears this pin, it's part of her, you know, part of her get together, so to speak. So the Gemara answers, Omer of Lamaichas. So what is she doing with this needle? If it, you know, it's not a sewing needle, that would be a Doraisa. But on the other hand, it doesn't seem to be ornamental, so what is it? Does it have some sort of function? Omer of Yosef, Hoil the Isho Regis Bas Siara. So that means that when a woman, you know, let's say she puts up her hair in a what's it called, a bun, if there's such a word, and she puts a needle, a pin through the bun in order to keep up her hair, because otherwise the hair starts floating in all directions. And if that be the case, then it's really functioning. It's an accessory that functions for her body. And therefore, again, on a Doraisa level, it would certainly be mutter. So he quotes Rashi here in Tosfos that they hold that they are stray hairs that protrude from beneath her hair coverings, and she winds these hairs around the needle and then thrusts the needle into the underside of her hat. So the hairs are hidden and are no longer visible. Okay. So now, the Gemara is going to ask the following question. Well, if the needle, if the pin is so functional that she wants to make sure that none of her hairs come out, then why would she take that off in the middle of Rosh Hashanah? Why did the Rabbanan make a gzera here? Right, if something's beautiful and ornate, and she meets a good friend of hers, oh, look at my, you know, my husband bought me this beautiful piece of jewelry. So she takes it off to show it to her. But here she's keeping it to make sure that her hair doesn't go out. I mean, she's not going to take it off. And besides, which is probably not very beautiful anyway. So Omerle Abai turns to Rav Yosef, and he says, V'tehevi, I'll give you an example of something else that she's allowed to wear. Kiviris tahora v'tishtere. Now the word tahora here has nothing to do with our sugya. I mean, Bleneder, maybe we'll talk about it, but this is not our sugya. That's a sugya later on Samach Gimel about biris in terms of tahora. So a biris is like a band that a woman wears on the top of her stockings to make sure that the stockings don't fall. V'tishtere. And she's allowed to wear these garters on Shabbos. The reason for that is because she would never think of taking them off because then her socks will fall down. So we have no chashash if she goes through Rosh Hashanah. So we have two, we can check off two conditions that have been fulfilled. Number one, it is an accessory to her body. So it's natural and normal for her to walk in the public, you know, with these things. And number two, we don't have to fear on a Rabbanah level that she'll take them off because she would never take them off in Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, even on a Rabbanah level, we have no chashash that she'll carry a Dalet Amos in Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, by analogy, says Abaye, the same logic should apply in the case of a machachein and a kuva, because since she's using it to keep her hair up, she doesn't want these stray hairs to be visible, then the last thing she'd want to do on Shabbos is to take off the pin, and then her hair would fly out. So why does the Mishnah say that she's not allowed to use, she's not allowed to wear this pin to keep up her hair on Shabbos, when she goes out to Rosh Hashanah? So at this point, the Gemara has to offer a different explanation for why she's not allowed to wear this pin. Ela Tirgumar Rav Ada Narsha. Narsha means he came from a town called Narshash. Narash. Kami Rav Yosef. And he explained it in the following way. Hoil the Isha Cholekes Ba Sa'ara. Now, this line in the Gemara is very difficult. The Gemara says that this pin is not holding up her hair, but it's like a comb. Right? Let's say a woman wants to, you know, when she combs her hair, she wants to split the hair at a certain point into two waves. So she runs this kind of a needle through her hair in order to separate it from one side to the other.
Okay.
So the Gemara is very perplexed by this. Shabbos l'mai chazir. What is she doing combing her hair on Shabbos? He says the following. He says that according to Rashi, a woman is not allowed to comb her hair on Shabbos.
Right.
Now that's very complicated because that has to do with what's called a davar sheina miskaven. She may, you know, take hairs out of her or unknot certain hairs. So I'm not sure. That's a machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon with regard to davar sheina miskaven. In any event, she's out there in Rosh Hashanah. So the Gemara basically is problematic if it's on two different levels. Number one, she's not allowed to comb her hair, so why is she doing this on Shabbos? And number two, obviously this is going to be a masa. She's simply carrying the hair. She's not using it as a pin to hold up her hair. So we're sort of in a bind over here because we have two polar extremes. We have a question of being matir something lechatchila, and it's not even osim rabbanon. And then we have another case where it might be osim doraisa. This pin that has no eye to it should fit into one of those two extreme categories, which would exclude it from our Mishnah. Either it's holding up her hair, and then we would never even think midrabanan that we have to worry about her taking it out. It's like the garter that we spoke about before. Or it's something that she uses to comb her hair, and that would be if she carries it through Rishus HaRabim, which I don't know why she would do such a thing, because she's not allowed to comb her hair on Shabbos. At least that's the way Rashi understands it. Then this would be a masa, she'd be carrying it, and she would be violating an Iser Masa, of carrying a Masa. So I just want to point out that Tosvis has a Gemara in Nazir, and the Gemara in Nazir seems to assume that you're allowed to comb your hair on Shabbos, and even a Nazir might be allowed to comb his hair, even though he's not allowed to take hairs out of his head, the Iser Tiglachis of a Nazir, because the Dover Shenim is Kamen. So Tosis has a whole nother pshat in this sugya. But first, if we want to, let's just see the Gemara's answer. Amar Rava, Tas Shel Zahav Yeshla Al Rosha. So there's a certain type of kli that apparently has two different functions. It's kind of a pin that could be used in two different ways. It could be used as a comb to part her hair, and it could also be used perhaps as an ornament, as a tachshit. And this is called a tas shel zahav. You know, I really need a book called Pirush Chai. I don't have a Pirush Chai, which has diagrams and pictures. In any event, let's just translate the words, and we'll try to understand I call it the sociology of it. Tashel Zahav is a flat bar that's made of gold. It's kind of a flat surface. And Yeshla Rosha. Now, what does this mean? It's a needle that on the head of the needle, because again, there's no eye of the needle, but instead of an eye on this needle, it has a little flat piece of gold. And this flat piece of gold can be used in one of two ways. Bechol, during the week, when there's no iser of combing our hair. Cholekes bar sara. So this bar of gold, I guess it probably, you know, this probably looks like a T, right? And there's a bar that goes on top. So that bar of gold can actually, if you turn it on its point, it could be used as a comb to separate her hair. Now, why would she wear such a thing in Rishus HaRabim? The answer is it has another function. Because it's made of gold, b'Shabbos minichasa keneged padachta. She'll actually stick it into her hair, maybe into our hat, and the gold bar will actually protrude on her forehead. You know, I was talking to my wife about this Gemara, and she says that she would recommend that I take a trip to the Israel Museum, because in the Israel Museum there's a whole section about, you know, ancient clothing of Jewish women. So maybe you would see there are all sorts of things that women wear on their forehead. Today it's a little bit out of style, although probably in the East you'll find it, maybe in India and other countries. And apparently it was quite common at the time of the Talmud that women would wear things on their forehead, in this case, a bar of gold. Now, once it's a bar of gold, and she's wearing it as an ornament, now we can solve that problem. Why? Because it has the status of a tachshit, so on a Doraisa level, she doesn't violate the Isra Otsah. On the other hand, Midrabbana, we're afraid she might pull it out and show it to a friend and carry it Dalet Amos Birshus HaRab. So that's what we have over here. Now, let me just go back for a moment to the word Tahora, which I told you really is not relevant to our sugya, but rather to the Gemara in later on, as far as Tumah V'Tahara is concerned. Okay, now the reason why this thing called a biris, which holds up our stockings, is tar, is because in Hilchas Tumah V'Tahara we have the following principle. You can have a kli, and you can have a second kli that functions together with the first kli. Like, let's say, for example, the Gemara envisions a pot, a kedera, and then they had a ring which they would loop through the kedera, and they were able to pick up the kedera with this ring. So it's interesting, the kedera itself is makabel tumah, that's a classic utensil. But the ring that functions as a tufel to the kli, and it's like an accessory to the kli, that's not makabel tumah. So the Gemara says that the stockings themselves that she wears, that would be makabel tumah, but if she puts a band around the stockings, that's already a cleat that functions on behalf of another cleat. Because that's going to be a sugya later on in Masechet Shabbos. It's amazing to me, Ira, how much of Masechet Shabbos is an overlap of Tumah V'Tahara. I always think to myself, you know, I never learned Mishnah's Taras, but you get a good taste of it here in Masechet Shabbos. Even if you never learn, you know, Daf Yomi doesn't include Taros because Taros is all Mishnah. So, you know, when people say to me, I'm making a siyum on Shas, you know, after the 7.5 year cycle, but it's really not so, because there are two major parts of Shas that they never learned, and that's Zroim and Taros. And now there's a second thing I wanted to point out here before we start the Mishnah. And what was that? Remind me. Had something else that I wanted to point out. Oh yeah, we had the Tosus that says that that from based on the Gemara Nazir, that there's no Easter for a woman to comb her hair on Shabbos. So why does the Gemara assume that if she has this, we called it a needle without an eye in it, that for sure she wouldn't use it on Shabbos? And this apparently this needle, until the Gemara has the gold bar attached to the needle, the Gemara thinks she uses it as a comb, and the Gemara rejects this because she would not comb her hair on Shabbos. Tosus can't accept that. So Tosus has to assume that the Gemara was asking a different kasha here. The Gemara is asking, okay, she might want to comb her hair on Shabbos with this needle, but she certainly wouldn't want to carry the needle in Rosh Hashanah. That doesn't make any sense. Okay then. So let's start the Mishnah. We're going to just read through this Mishnah very, very quickly, because the Gemara is going to go into detail about every single part of this Mishnah. So even if we don't understand the Mishnah, we shouldn't feel that we're left out. Lo yetze ha'ish besandal ha'misumar. Now I'm thinking of baseball, and tell me if you think I'm right. There may be many other sports. The baseball players wear shoes that I think have nails underneath it. Is that correct? Or am I mixed?
Spikes.
So that's what we're dealing with here. Misumar comes from the word masmer, which is a nail or a spike.
Okay.
And for some reason, unbeknown to us, the Mishnah prohibits wearing this kind of a spiked shoe on Shabbos. You and I would have said that if that's the way they manufacture shoes, and maybe what that does is protects the bottom of the shoe, or it gives you a little bit more of a grip in the ground, so that's the way you wear a shoe. And you're allowed to wear shoes in Rosh Hashanah Mon Shop. So we have to figure out why a sandal misubar is prohibited on Shabbos. Okay. Next. Velo bi yachid. let's say a person lost one of his shoes, he's not allowed to wear one shoe without the other. And this is for two reasons. One reason is because he might be the laughing stock of the neighborhood. And, you know, people start laughing at him, and he'll take off his shoe, and he'll start carrying it. The other possibility is that if he only has one shoe, then maybe that shoe is being worn for a different purpose. Because again, if he's wearing it as a shoe, he should be wearing a shoe on each one of his feet. Now you might ask me, why would he wear a shoe if he's not wearing shoes? You know, if let's say he belongs to that cult where they go barefoot, why did he put on a shoe? It could be that he has a wound on one of his feet, and he's wearing the shoe just to protect himself from a wound. And that's not called a malbush. Bizman she'ein baraglo maka. Oh. So now the Mishnah seems to assume that if he does have a wound on his foot, it's very possible that he wears a kind of a shoe that would protect his wound. Because if he's walking barefoot and he steps on stones and so on, it could certainly irritate his wound. So maybe under those circumstances, no one's going to laugh at him. And it makes sense, why is he wearing a shoe on one foot? V'lo b'tfillin. Now we're assuming that Shabbos is completely excluded from tefillin. Normally, during the week, if you wear tefillin, that's called a malbush. That's the way a Jew dresses. But on Shabbos, we don't wear tefillin. And therefore it becomes a masa. V'lo b'kamia, and now we're talking about this was famous at the time of Yonasan Ibishitz, a very sad episode in Jewish history, but I'm not sure what's called in English, a kamiya. You know, these are the things that you wear for to ward off the evil eye.
Right.
Oh, I know what it's called. It's called an amulet.
Right. Amulet.
And there was a kamiya. And there was a whole pulmus, because apparently Rabbi Yonasan Ibishitz was accused of wearing an amulet. And they thought that he was a Shabtai Tzvinik.
Right.
And Rabbi Yaakov Emden, it was a horrible piece of Jewish history.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, but back in the day, they knew the secrets of amulets. They would write the name of Hashem on a parchment, and the experts knew exactly for what disease, to ward off what disease, which shame of Hashem could protect you.
Okay.
I'm assuming that if the Rambam was here in the room, I don't know, I didn't get a chance to look at the Rambam, if he says anything on this Mishnah, he would tell you that we don't have this science anymore. We don't know how to make these amulets, but they knew how to make amulets. So today, we have something like an amulet. I'm joking with you. My wife gets an email from her group. She's part of a group of interior designers. And now all of the emails, because the interior designers are really not working now, they're all about this disease, you know. And so they had a whole thing that the women should bake challah in honor of a certain Nebuchadnezzar, one of the sons-in-law, a son-in-law of one of the famous women in this group is very, very ill. Actually, if you want to add his name,
sure,
because he's really, really hovering, if you know what I mean by hovering. His name is Nisanel Ben Sora Zahava. And you can add that name if you can, because he's really now... It's amazing, because on Friday, he was feeling a little bit better, and they thought it was time to celebrate a miracle, but now, over Shabbos, it really dipped down. Anyway, so what I want to tell you, on Erev Shabbos, my wife gets an email, you know, WhatsApp, that everybody should bake challahs for this Nisanel. You know? So that's the amulets of our time, you know.
Right.
Anyway, so bizman she'eino min ha-mumche. So there were the real professionals who knew exactly how to be mechavi the shemos and write the names of God, and then there was the upstarts, the apprentices. You know, they didn't really know exactly this science, and the Mishnah is implying that if you have a kameah that was proven by a mumcha, in other words, it was written by an expert, and he knows his business, then she's allowed to wear that on Shabbos. Why? Because that's protecting her from a disease. She would never even dream of taking it off.
Right.
But in the case of Eino Min HaMumcha, it's not written by an expert, so it's a nice kamiya that she's wearing, but she might actually take it off. V'lo b'shiryon, v'lo b'kazda, v'lo b'magafayim. These are three types of armor that the soldiers used to wear when they went out to battle. Again, we have to take a trip to a museum. So a kazda, I can tell you what a kazda is, because even in modern Hebrew they use the word kazda when I was in the army, and it's called a helmet. Magafayim are, it seems like when they went out to battle, they used to put things over their knees in order to protect the knees. They're shin guards. And then there's something called shiryon. Also, some sort of an armor that they wore over their body. And we don't allow this on Shabbos. The big question is whether or not this would be a violation of a Doraisa. I don't think this could be Doraisa. I would have to assume this is the Rabbana. And therefore the Mishnah says, V'im Yotza Eino Chayv Chatos, right? Now, I would assume that V'im Yotza Eino Chayv Chatos could refer to the entire Mishnah, because as we said before, if he's wearing this spiked shoes, then the Rabbana are afraid of something, or one shoe and not the other, he might take it off, and so forth. Even in the case of Tefillin, since during the week it's called a Malbush, I would assume on Shabbos it's also a Malbush, so this might be a Rabbana. Fine. So, in the few minutes that we have left, let's take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, Sandal amesumer my timer. Why can't you wear a spiked shoe on Shabbos? And we're about to learn a very depressing piece of Gemara. So, brace yourself for this. Very depressing. Very depressing. Amar Shmuel. Shmuel tells us the following. Shilfei hagzera hayu. What happened is that the Romans were out to get the Jews, so it was during a period where the Jews were running away and hiding from the Romans. Shilfei means the fugitives, and they were hiding in a cave. Vayu nechbaim b'ma'ora v'amru, and they declared, Hanichnas ikanes, anyone who wants to join us to hide from the enemies, come in. But ayotel yetze, don't go out. Why? Because the enemy might see you as you go out, or you might leave tracks in the ground, and then they'll find us. They'll discover our location. Nefach sandolo shel echad mihem. In other words, somebody came into the cave, and apparently his shoe was on backwards, and the footprint seemed to indicate that there were people coming out of the cave. And they didn't allow anyone to come out of the cave because the enemy would track down those tracks, those footprints, and if they saw footprints going out of the cave, they knew that there were Jews inside the cave. So at this point, Kasvurim heim echad mehem yotza, they began to think that one of the people in the cave violated their agreement, and he left the cave because it looked like in the footprint that somebody went out of the cave only because his shoe was backwards.
Right.
V'ra'u oivim, and they were afraid that the enemy was now going to attack them. V'yachshav boim aleim akav. Now, so what happens? They're in a state of total pandemonium. Dachaku zebazeh. Now, I'll translate this literally, and then I'll tell you what I think it means. And again, you don't have to agree with me. No one has to agree with me. It says they pushed each other. I think what it means is that since they were wearing sandals with spikes in them, they started kicking one another with spikes. V'hargu zeh zeh. And they killed each other. Yoser mimasha hargu be ha'oivim. It was even more tragic than when they were attacked by the enemy. Wow. That's a very, very sad story. So we're going back like 2,000 years in history. And because of this terrible tragedy, Chazal said we don't wear these sandals on Shabbos. Why? Because Shabbos is meant to be a day of oneg, not a day of avelus. And these sandals would remind the Jews of that terrible tragedy that took place back in the time of the Romans. Now we have a slightly different version of the same incident. It's almost identical. Rabbi Elod ben Elazar Omer, b'ma'ara hayu yoshvim. So the Jews were hiding in a cave. Shamu kol me'al ha'ma'ara. They heard a noise above the cave. Kasvurim, they mistakenly thought, shahayu boyim aleim oivim. And it really wasn't so. Maybe it was a bird that flew over the cave. Who knows? Again, dachku zeba zehir. I think they were just in a state of panic, and they pushed each other. I don't know what happened. And v'hargu zeh et zeh yosef b'masha hargu b'em oivim. Again, this is another formulation of what happened there, but it was all because of these spiked sandals. They killed each other, and Chazal say that any wearing of this shoe would remind us of that tragedy, and that's not something we want to do on Shabbos. It's like Avelus on Shabbos or Tsar on Shabbos. Rami Bar Yechezkel, this is the third version of exactly what happened. The Beis HaKnesses HaYosef. It didn't happen in a cave, but rather it happened in a synagogue. Shamu Kol Me'achori Beis HaKnesses. They heard a noise from the back. Kasvurim Hayu Sheboim Aleim Oivim. Dachaku Zeba Zeva Hargu Zed Ze Yosef Imasha Hargu Bem Oivim. Bi Osa Shah Amru Al Yetze Adam Besandol HaMesumar B'Shabbos. They declared and they decreed that no one should wear this sandal. So Ihachi Bechol Nami Litzar. Maybe we should aser it even on Chol. So at this point, the Gemara Nahamina thinks that there's a danger in wearing these kinds of shoes. And the Gemara answers, no. This has nothing to do with danger. But Maisa Ki Hava B'Shabbos Hava. This has to do with putting yourself into a mental state in which you remind yourself of what took place so many years ago. And what would remind you of what happened if you wear it on Shabbos? The Gemara says, B'yontif Lishterei. Maybe we should allow wearing these sandals on Yontif Alama Tnan. Why does the Mishnah say in Beitza? Here we look on Samach Amid Beis. Mishalchim Kalim B'Yontif. You're allowed to send certain kinds of gifts on Yontif in order to present people with clothes that they might want to wear. Bein Tfurim Bein She'enon Tfurim, because even if it's a cloth that hasn't been sewn as a garment, they may throw it over their body to warm themselves. So that's a good thing to give those kind of gifts on Yontif. Avalo sandal hamesumar. Velo minol she'eno tofer biyontif. Because a minol she'eno tofer biyontif cannot be functional. So you can't say you gave him a gift that he can use on Yontif. But why not a sandal hamesumar? And the answer is, b'Shabbos my time of the Ika ki nufya. When the people gather together on Shabbos, and they're going to think about this terrible tragedy, it's going to bring them down and depressed into a state of mourning. Is the Yontif Nami Ika Kinufya. On Yontif as well, people are gathered together and they don't want to destroy that simcha, that happiness and joy of Yontif. And therefore, if they would wear this kind of a sandal, it would undermine their state of simcha. And then the Gemara asks, Tainis Tzibur Ika Kinufya. Right, we also get together on a Tainis Tzibur Litzar. Maybe people again remind themselves of this terrible tragedy. And the answer is Maisa ki havi v'knufya di sura hocha knufya de tera havi. Tosus has an interesting twist here, back on Samach Omer Aleph, that when they heard those noises and they thought that, according to those versions, that they thought that the enemies were coming, it was because of these sandals, that these sandals with the nails in them had a certain kind of a noise, and a certain situation arose as a result of that, and therefore we have to worry about the repetition of this incident another time. So the Gemara now makes sense when it asks the Kasha, well, if that be the case, even B'chol, we should always be afraid of such a thing. And the Gemara therefore rejects this original position, that it wasn't that the Chazal were afraid that this kind of a terrible incident would occur again somewhere down the line, but rather they were preventing people from being saddened by the memory of that calamity. And this they accomplished by excluding these kind of sandals on a day that's similar, that could remind themselves of now, again, the Gemara thinks that on Yom Tov there should be no reason for that Isur, because since the incident didn't happen on Yom Tov, it happened on Shabbos. So why would that sadden them and remind them of that incident? So the Gemara answers that there's a concept here called knufya. You know, people gather together in the shuls, they daven together on Shabbos, they learn together, and the same thing is true for Yom Tov. And because of these gatherings, Chazal wanted to decree wearing these sandals that occurred in a knufya, occurred when there was a group of Jews together, and they went into that panic. And once again, because that would remind them of that incident. But what challenges my mind is the next Gemara's kasha, when the Gemara says Tainis Tzibur Ika Kenufya, which means that people gather together in order to do tshuva, in order to make takanos, in order to fast together and daven together. Why would that be litzar? Litzar means that we don't want you to, to be in that state of being upset. Why would that be a problem on Tainis Tzibur? Well, why Litzar? I mean, again, we're not saying that every single situation or gathering that would remind us of the event should therefore be asur in wearing these kinds of shoes. Now we're saying that people shouldn't be saddened by the memory of this calamity. So I understand that that they don't wear it on Shabbos, not even on Yom Tov. There's a knufya. We don't want you to be saddened. But on a Tainis Tzibur, is there some sort of Easter being sad on a Tainis Tzibur? I mean, after all, Tainis Tzibur was decreed for a very, an impending Chas Shalom doom. The only thing that occurs to me here right now, in order to explain the Havmina that this should be an Easter of this kind of a sandal, Mesumar, on Tainis Tzibur, is based on the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi has a different explanation of the Gzerah. And that has to do with, putting the people in a way that they'll remember what happened. That could actually engender fear, a tremendous fear. The Yerushalmi says that when Nashim, when women who were pregnant would see the sandal, or they would hear the noise of the sandal, and it would remind them of that terrible catastrophe, Mapilos v'lodoseim mipachad. Again, this is very challenging for us in our sociology to understand what that means. But he says that hachayalim shel osat kufa, the chayalim during that period of time, hayu lovshim sandalim misumarim. That's the way the soldiers would walk around. Kshayu anoshim roos Siman shel saldanim alolu ba'aretz hayum apilos. Wow, they were just absolutely in a state of fright due to this memory of the terrible catastrophe that took place back in the time. So that's what the Gemara now differentiates, that the Knufia of a Tainus Tzibur doesn't have to remind us of that original catastrophe, because Maisa Kihava beKnufia di Sura, the Maisa that happened on Shabbos, which was a day in which people got together, it was a day of Isur Malacha, but Hacha Knufia that Tera, there's no Isur Malacha on a Tainus, and therefore it's not similar to the gathering together of people on a Shabbos or a Yontif, which has to do with Iser Malacha. Now, there's a kasha here that Rav Kivega raises others, that the Gemara Masech the Tainus says that there is an Iser Malacha on Tainus, but that's only during the day. At night, there's no Iser Malacha, so it's not exactly similar to the Iser Malacha of Yontif or of Shabbos. Now the Ran has a different take on this distinction between Kinufya de Sura and Kinufya de Tera. And he says the following. He says, B'Shabbos v'Yontif, Hasurim v'Malacha Gozru Shalotzi spoke Kidei Shalot Yizkru Amaisa She'ira V'Yavoli De Tzar V'Yimonu Mimitzah Simchas Shabbos v'Yontif Mashenke V'Tainis Tzibur. So again, that's the way we interpret the sugi. The only thing is, we're not exactly sure how to put this pshat into the Gemara. I guess the concept of Isura here means a Kedusha Sayom, and the Kedusha Sayom generates not only an Isur, but also a mitzvah of Simcha Vionik. The Gemara now adds that on Shabbos and Yontif, where there's a great similarity, therefore even if somebody thinks that with regard to other dvarim, lo gazru, elek shumamish mein ora, he says that even if in certain gzeris, which hopefully we'll see about, we have a shita that only if there's an exact similarity to that original episode do we have the gzera. And here you might think that Yontif is a little bit different than Shabbos. He says, Afilu l'Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva diomer. He has a shita that lo osru ela b'yardim b'sfira k'mais shahoya, that whatever Iser we institute as a result of an episode that took place, it's got to be absolutely similar to that episode. So there's a case of mechatos, efer chatos, and the Chacham said you're not allowed to take it by boat. Why? Because one time they took it by boat over the Yarden, and there was a kezias of a mess. There was a piece of flesh of a dead body that was somehow tochuv b'karkos asfino, that was underneath the boat, bottom part of the boat. And as a result, nitmu v'nifsalu, the mechatus became posel, and mechatus is something that once becomes posel, becomes tummy, it's very hard to replace it, as you know. It comes from a paradum, which is so rare. And Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva said that although you're not allowed to cross a yardin because of the mashas shahoya, we're not going to extend it to other bodies of water, other rivers, and say you can't cross a river. We're only going to asser it in the tzura, in the original way that it was done. But, says the Gemara, he would still admit in the case of a sandal that we can combine Yontif and Shabbos together, and that's called Me'ein Hama'ora Mamish, because Hani Mili, we differentiate between Yardin, Deshaini, Mishar, Nahoros. Every river is a little bit different, so Yardin is different. Hava Yontif and Shabbos, Ki Adodi Ninu. They really have a certain equality, almost an absolute an equation between the two. Disnad for the Mishnah Megillah says, "Ein bein Yontif l'Shabbos el ochel nefesh bilvad." The only difference between Shabbos and Yontif is ochel nefesh, but fundamentally it's the same kedusha. And again, in the light of the Ran and what we were saying all along, this idea of not remembering some catastrophic event and be mitztayer on a Shabbos would apply to a yontif as well, because they both have the same identical kedusha that generates a mitzvah of oneg and simcha. Now, the Gemara now embarks upon an analysis of what exactly this sandal hamesumar looks like. In other words, when is it aser and when is it not aser? Because we need a very striking similarity in order to subsume a particular sandal, even if it has a masmerim in it, as the sandal hamesumar that was prohibited by the Chachamim. So we'll stop here. In Amir Hashem, we'll continue tomorrow. We're up to Omar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel here on Daf Samach Amid Beis, approximately 12 lines down from the top of the Omar.